and welcome to Talking Theater. I'm Alex Dunneman, and today I'm joined by Jade Elliott-McRae to talk about intimacy and combat on the stage.
Hello, how are you?
Very good. How are you doing?
Good. I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me.
Not a problem. So I'd like to start just with a little introduction. So you can give a little bit of background of yourself as a theater artist or artist in general.
Sure. I was born in Banff, Alberta, and grew up in Calgary. I was to an entertainment family. My mother's a ballet teacher, and my father's a writer, and worked in IATSE and all that stuff. So I've been involved in the entertainment industry my entire life. One of my mentors likes to say I was conceived and brought up in utero in movement, because I was my mom was pregnant doing a ballet, doing My Fair Lady, actually, when I was being gestated.
Wow. So
I've literally been a movement professional my entire life. I studied at my mom's ballet school a little bit, and then I was trained at a place called the Young Canadian School of Performing Arts in Calgary that does the grandstand shows, and moved to Ontario back in the day, and I've just been sort of working as an actor and stuntman and that kind of thing my whole life. I got into fight direction sort of like as a primary source of things about 5 years ago. What led me to that was a bit of a roundabout thing. I've been studying martial arts my whole life. I've been doing choreography. My mom actually, when I came to fight direction, it was really funny. She used to say that I used to play with my G.I. Joes. The articulated G.I. Joes where you can move all their limbs.
Yeah, you can do all the
I used to choreograph fight scenes as opposed to just mashing them together. Like each movement would be choreographed. And I didn't realize that my brain was doing that, but I've been doing it since I was a kid. And I used to do like sword fights, and I grew up in the 80s. So, of course, all the ninja movies, I had my cutout throwing stars and my broom handle nunchucks and...
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. Those movies for me were definitely Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I'm a little older than you, so.
Exactly. That's my generation of it.
Yeah, I came to that one late. I'm talking like Gymkhata and Revenge of the Ninja. Those early terrible 80s movies. Anyway, so...
terribly wonderful.
Yeah, exactly. So I had actually a bad experience with a fight director. And I remember thinking to myself at the time, there's got to be a better way to do this. And then I came to Fight Directors Canada and found out that without looking for it, I was part of a community that had been going on for a while and was recreating this stuff. And then I got involved in Western martial arts, which is, I found out to my surprise that this was a whole thing that I hadn't known about specifically. I've been doing it on my own in a vacuum sort of thing. And to find that community was very interesting to say, to realize that you're not the only one who thinks about this stuff, who looks at the violence in plays and movies and dissects it and thinks about what it means and how it affects the story and stuff. To come to that was very fun. And that's when I started working more as a fight director. I really enjoy it. I think it's I don't even know how to put that into context of how much it means to me, because it combines all the things that I was trained to do, which was as an actor and a dancer. I was a retired dancer for a long time. Because my, you know, old and my knees are no longer able. The young dancing is a young man's game, let's put it that way. And combining that with my love of martial arts and swordsmanship and those stories that were, I was brought up in Star Wars and all that stuff, Kendo and all those things, and the martial arts that I studied, sort of blended into this art form that is not really recognized as an art form, even though it is separate, because it combines all of those other art forms into one thing.
Yeah, well, once you know it's an art form, too, you see it in everything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I know I grew up loving... It's always been, sometimes I say, it's like, you know, the young boy, you're like, oh, swords and everything.
Oh, yeah. Standing.
But I remember watching, like, The Princess Bride.
Of course, that Bob Anderson,
I was like, that's amazing. How does how do they do that?
How do they do that? So here's something a lot of people don't know. When they're talking about, there's in the script, they talk about what they're doing. Now, it doesn't perfectly match with what those things are, but did you actually know that Fiore... defending his capoferro, did you know his thing? When they're talking about those, they're actual fencing masters. And the movements that they are using, and it's like, because I studied his Agrippa. His Agrippa, when he's going up backwards, is a tactic that actually is used. So it's fascinating to know that Bob Anderson had choreographed that in mind with that thing.
That was always, I've always seen that one and been like constantly amazed by it.
Yeah, it's one of the most famous ones, and it's such a great swashbuckly thing. Here's a little side note enjoyment. You're at the University of Alberta now, and J.P. Fournier,
yes,
the fencing master and maestro d'arts here at the university, was trained by Paddy Crane, who was the guy who trained Bob Anderson to do that fight. Paddy Crane was the stunt double for Errol Flynn. Back in the day. If you don't know who he is, I encourage you all to look up who Errol Flynn, and he was the granddaddy of all combat, stage combat. He's the kind of guy who started being a tactic. Started from sport fencing into this thing on
also
stage.
Also with a name like that, I mean, perfect.
Paddy. Paddy. He lived in Canada for a long time. And he worked at Stratford for a while. And he trained at JP. And he trained a bunch of people. The Paddy Crane Armory is in Stratford, Ontario, at the Stratford Festival.
Okay. Awesome.
And then a group of people started the Paddy Crane Workshop in Banff. Every 2 years, a group of like-minded individuals get together and play with stage combat and Western martial arts in Banff. And so it's happening this year. And this year is Footsteps of Giants, where the masters will come and their apprentices who are passing this art down. So this year, JP and Patrick Howarth are going to demonstrate. So there's a direct connection and correlation to stage and this university specifically.
Yeah.
JP being trained by that. So that swashbuckling thing, you have a 6 degree separation to that choreography. Yeah, how about that?
Exactly. Oh, wow. That's awesome. So... I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what you're doing here at the U of A right now.
My wife is doing her master's at the university, and so she is working on plays, and so I'm just living in Edmonton and hanging out and working and as you do. Mm-hmm. And she is currently working on a project called If They Were Birds. Mm-hmm. It was a play, Canadian play written by Aaron Shields, and it involves a lot of violence of the intimate sort. The play is, I won't say it's specifically about rape, but it happens a lot about it. It is a message about what happens to women in war a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. That's an oversimplification of what all of this is. It's based and set in a Greek style. It's very wonderful. So she brought me in as the director of violence, the fight director, and intimacy. Mm-hmm. So keeping the actors safe and working those stories honestly and making a visceral experience for the audience while keeping the actors completely and 100% mentally, psychologically safe.
Yeah, and that's... interesting too, because this was new for me. I got a chance to do a workshop with you and Siobhan on the weekend about intimacy on the stage, and that to me was a whole new something that makes so much sense, but was like a whole new thing. Right?
It's a relatively new idea, and it's a new idea, but an old idea.
Yes.
Right? So I describe it as this intimacy for the stage workshop. This has started, as far as I know. You can correct me. I can do some more research on this. But it came to me through a woman named Tonya Sina, I think her name is. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm saying that right. She's from Oklahoma City, and she's giving workshops. She's been doing this for about 15 years.
Okay.
And was an article released about her and her work, and it sort of took North America by storm.
Yeah.
Because it suddenly became a topic where we all went, well, intimacy, of course, we're actors. It's intimate. Mm-hmm. And then you stop and think about the occasions you've had to be on stage going, I have to make out with that person right now. Hi, how are you? Nice to meet you. I guess I'm putting my tongue in your mouth. That sort of thing. So when you started dissecting the idea of intimacy, it really struck me as something that was not talked about, not being used constructively, not even a discussion that we're having. Yeah. And at about the same time that article went around, the facts of what had been happening in Chicago came out with that company and actors using their characters as a guise to sexually harass and assault people on stage because that's what their character would do. And so when those three things started combining, and one of my friends and mentors, Siobhan Richardson, was taking this workshop from Tonya, it suddenly became very clear that this was work that needed to be discussed.
Yeah.
And it needed to be done, and it needed to be done in such a way that it was part of the culture. That's the goal, ultimate goal for this, for us, is to make it part of the tradition and the culture of stage passed down. So they have, Tonya, Siobhan, and myself to a certain degree, and another woman have started this thing called Intimacy Directors International.
Mm-hmm.
And what that is going to be is a collection of artists that will be vetted and checked on with references and so forth, that they are qualified to work in this field and work in the safety of actors. And, you know, so we're hoping that people will come forward and say, oh, I loved working with that person. There's great testimonials, that kind of thing. So that it's not like, oh, I want to be an intimacy director because I like to abuse people. Those things don't come out. So we're going to do our research and vet it and, you know, work. It's a loose collection right now. Nothing's been set. So where we're at with that, we're working on mission statements about what we're trying to do and what we're trying to accomplish. We want to start the conversation with unions.
Yeah.
Equity, actors in Canada, I know we would like to start that conversation. I believe that conversation has begun. I can't say any more than that. I don't know how far it's gone in the conversation, but I know it's been raised and that the conversation has started, which is very exciting because best practices for this to keep people safe, happy, and the art form going forward is very good.
Yeah.
A place for resources, you know, like things like the psychology of rape or the psychology of intimacy and stuff, things that are not necessarily thought about a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And that's not to say that actors and directors aren't doing their research, but to say that I will admit before I started getting involved in this work, when it came to kissing another person, I didn't really do that much research about what it would do to me as a person or what my character was thinking when I did it. Sure, I thought about the storyline. Oh, I'm in love with this person. That's great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But there's a psychological protection that we often haven't talked about, that we've discovered that if you build these little protections involved, it allows the characters to be in love and the actor to be separate from it.
Yeah.
You know? Talked about that. I'm not talking about workshops. Hopefully we can do workshops around so that the conversation continues with actors and directors, that the safety practices are built.
Yeah.
And
I know that was great for me even as a director, because even I've just started a rehearsal process yesterday, and even in that process we had a great chat about intimacy, and there are people who knew each other very well and they're very used to working with each other, but there's even a few things they're like, oh, I didn't really think about that, and they know as well that there's moments that, you know, they may be less comfortable even though they know each other so well. It's almost, sometimes it seems even better to talk about it when you think you really know someone, because you sometimes assume things, right? Like, oh, they're fine with this, but then it's like, oh, wait, maybe they were at one point, but not now.
And so, well, and that's the idea of consent in this stuff, is that consent can change moment to moment. Now, of course, when you're on stage, the idea is that you've built a rehearsal practice that you can get to the moments that you need to get to and stay there. But nothing changes in that. It's not permission to do it any other time. It's not permission to do any sort of intimacy outside that moment. And then it builds the practices of safety for the actor to get to the most vulnerable moments.
Absolutely.
I know when you're working with like violence and intimacy, building those moments so that the actors are safe, that they can go to the places they need to go to emotionally, is a really important practice. And that being said, one of the things that I'm discovering is that spreading the knowledge that with stage combat and with, this is a personal opinion I hope that the world catches on to, a lot of people are practicing this way, some aren't, some are. Like any art, I think it's really important to understand that the idea of methoding or putting yourself in the position of someone doing violence is not possible on the stage, because the first, I work under the first, the guys that the first two rules of all stage combat is safety for yourself and your responsibility to safety for your partner. And if you are so method and you are so in the moment that you're feeling that you can do whatever to your partner, you're not actually protecting them, which is what that thing in Chicago went down, is people ending up with broken bruises or sexually assaulted, pawing, that sort of thing, because under the guise of this is what my character would do, being so in the moment, which is a crafted moment, and we have to remember that the crafted moment is for the audience, not for the actors. Right? So, and what the audience perceives from our moments is great, but you can't ever get so deep into your emotional state that you're actually choking someone on stage. Like, oh, take this, I feel so good about myself, while you're murdering someone.
Well, the thing is, what is the audience getting from that, right? Like, they don't, they can't tell the difference if you're doing it well, right? Like, and so why would you harm someone else? And that actually comes nicely into a little thing. I loved how you talked about, even in your workshop, people will talk about the complaints in reverse, where they're like, oh, well, it's not spontaneous if, or, you know, if we're choreographing it so much, like these intimate moments, like why can't they be? But I love where you brought up the point about how, you know, we don't look at the text as something that you can ad lib off of or just change on the fly. So the idea of text or movement as text was very compelling.
Well, when you build a fight specifically, once you build a choreography, you're not going to throw an extra move into something. And that sounds obvious, but of course, when you're doing it, why would you wouldn't do that? Same with dance. You're not just going to start improving West Side Story in the middle of, you know, the Jets danced. When you're, I feel like doing Twyla Tharp all of a sudden. It's an odd choice. So we discovered with intimacy is the same thing. And when you approach intimacy as a choreographed thing. Now, again, I want to be clear about this for myself and for other people, is that when you're developing things, you have to be free to play. And there is a spontaneity involved. But when you're dealing with intimacy on someone else's body, you have to have the conversation while or before you're doing it. Oh, my intention was this, the actor would say. May I then try this intention? It's not a matter of in the moment going, okay, and it felt in that moment I was going to grab your breast and just go forward. You have to have the conversation before. So you're discovering it together. There is some sort of play, but once that choreography is set and you had the conversation, that choreography stays just like text. You can change where you are in the guise of your intention. Like you can go a little more, a little less, depending on how you feel on the night, but it has to stay somewhere in the same realm because, again, first rule applies, especially with movement. You're protecting the person you're with. And if suddenly you decide to add more motion of violence, you are now harming the person you're supposed to be protecting. Do you know what I mean? So exactly. That's the way we think about it, and I think about it specifically, that this is a specific text that the audience is seeing. And an important note to remember, that audiences are really savvy.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean they know what they're watching.
Yeah.
But what they do know from an emotional standpoint is when real violence is happening.
Mm-hmm.
My job as a fight director and an intimacy choreographer is to make the audience uncomfortable while making them comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
If we're so good at hiding it and so good that it actually looks violent, you'll actually bring the audience out of the moment and worried for the actor. I don't ever want my audiences to be worried for the actor. I want them to be worried for the character, which allows us to go to these emotional and interesting places for violence and for intimacy on stage, because the audience will go with us on the ride about the characters. They shouldn't ever be concerned that that actor was harmed on stage.
And that's the thing. I've seen productions even where there was, you know, it was only a two-person show, but this person, like, did a, I would say, incredibly, it looked really cool, but super unsafe move, and hit his head and was bleeding and like in the show. And no one at that point onward was paying attention to what was happening. They were just like, this guy is bleeding.
Yeah.
We have to do something. And so you remove them from the experience, right?
Not to mention putting the people who are doing the thing in danger.
Yeah.
And best practices tell us you probably shouldn't, if you're playing, like, for example, playing with swords, stab your scene partners. I'm pretty sure that's a crime.
Yeah.
Under all guises, it's a thing. You know, and so it's a really interesting topic to think that the fight directors and the intimacy choreographers and the people who are supposed to keep actors safe and keep the audience interested, if you go too real and too much meth and too much into the moment, you've actually broken the wall where the audience is now enjoying, or just not enjoying as they're supposed to, the play that they're watching. They're now worried for the people who are doing the play, and that's an entirely different experience. And you've lost the art in that. Now you're watching YouTube videos of people getting shot or something like that. And that's a totally different thing of what that I want to provide.
Well, exactly. And spontaneity seems like a thing for the rehearsal hall, too.
Absolutely.
Because the rehearsal hall is the safe environment.
It is. But spontaneity in the rehearsal hall, especially when dealing with intimacy, has to come from conversation.
Yeah.
And you can talk about intention. You can do the practice choreography, the block, the square of where you are at the moment, and go, you know, after you've done the rehearsals, or I felt like in this moment my character might have done this.
Yeah.
Is this okay for me to do?
Mm-hmm.
Person you're working with would either agree or not agree. And you have a conversation, and that conversation is something that's the cornerstone of what we're talking about with safety and working in intimacy, is that you have to have the conversations.
Yeah.
Yes, you can be spontaneity in that moment is, oh, I really feel like I would do this, not to do it. And it's the same with fight choreography. If I'm doing a boxing number on a stage, and the choreography is right cross, jab, left cross, and you go, you know what? I really feel like I would have kicked you in the man parts right there. You can say that, but you're not just going to, in the middle of the choreography, stop, look at your partner and kick them.
Of course.
That's assault, again, going back to the thing.
Yeah.
So I don't understand, I don't rationalize that intimacy would be any different.
Yeah.
So you have to keep it open for your actors to play and have their conversations with each other and with you as the creator, going, I really feel like this moment should be this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talk about where the audience looks, because ultimately directors and fight directors are the third eye. They're the thing from the audience's perspective.
Yeah.
We're keeping our actors safe. We're also going, what is the audience seeing? And sometimes an impulse that an actor may have, go, I want to do this thing. You go, great. But if you do that, it leads the audience to think this. So it's it's always a give and take conversation. And you can't ever be so spontaneous that you're launching yourself at your partner and going, hey, was that all right afterwards? And, you know, someone's a quivering mess on the floor. That is the exact opposite of what we're trying to
Because you want to promote work and art and, like, keep it going forward. And the last thing you need is, as an actor or anyone in the room, suddenly feeling so uncomfortable they can't keep going. And it's like, well, how are you helping anything at that point?
Well, and you also don't want to carry scars from doing this work. I mean, putting yourself in an emotional place of a rape victim or someone who's doing a rape on stage is very dangerous psychologically if you let yourself get to the point where you feel like you're doing these things. And I often I try to tell my actors, and I try to encourage them to understand that the horror that you're doing is your character's, not you. Mm-hmm. You can't get so far into the mindset that you're doing physical and psychological harm to yourself. And it is done that way. And some actors go that far. I mean, you hear the movie actors doing their method thing where they stay in character for months and so forth. And I'm to each their own.
Yeah.
You know, I believe that people can have any process they want. But when it comes to physical violence or physical intimacy with another human being, you cannot be so far into your character that you're causing another person harm, because that's not the art form.
Yeah.
And it's also assault or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that I'm trying to advocate. going forward, is that you can do great work and make the audience go on the journey that they need to go on. And this, to me, is also film. You can make the audience feel anything you need them to feel while keeping your actors safe. Yeah. And I think that longevity of careers is a really important thing that should be talked about. And this intimacy thing, to me, again, going back to that, is really interesting because I've been an actor for a really long time.
Yeah.
And I've had intimate scenes on stage, and I've kissed people on stage and stuff, and I've never had this conversation with a director or anybody. Now, I'm not saying that I haven't had great directors who helped us through that, and they did, but it was never put to me in such a way that it was immediately that there were these rules that you followed.
Yeah.
Or there was a best practices that if you do these things, everyone will be okay. It just was assumed. And even with the nicest and greatest directors I've ever been with, they looked after us and we looked after each other. Some of the techniques that we did to look after each other, which was conversation and, you know, is it okay if I do this? That was happening naturally. But I've also been in situations where that didn't happen. And those are the ones that I find and I've heard from other people that are more common, that either a director is uncomfortable talking about it or they just don't talk about it and the actors go off on their own and figure it out. And putting two people alone in a room to figure out intimacy can be fine, but it can also not be fine. So if we build best practices going, okay, well, so this is just how we handle it. It's not that it's always going to be bad, but you know what? Let's not ever let it be bad. So always have a third person watching, like, for example, like a third person who's an outside eye, because you always need an audience, right? It's that audience perspective. If it's not the director, maybe a stage manager. It was a great person to have that. So, so building those little things, going, okay, so this is just how we're going to handle it, and creating a culture around the idea of combat and intimacy, that those are now the best practices.
Well, it's great because I never would have, I mean, I always tried as a director to tackle those things as in the most positive way possible, but having this just removed any type of like doubt from my mind, because I was like, oh, I know how to do this now. It's like, oh, I've got some ways that I can actually tackle this and keep people safe. So, it, I mean, I can't imagine why directors wouldn't want to learn about this, because it's just, you know, as a director, you often enter into a position where you're like, I have to know so much. And when you're struggling to figure something out, it's just, it makes your job even harder. And
Well, the idea of what we're trying to, the ultimate end goal of something, starting something like Intimacy Directors International, which is a fantastically love name, the IDI, or whatever the, IDI, whatever the acronym is, terrible acronyms. Is that we would put ourselves out of a job. Because I would love never to have this conversation again, in the sense that I have to talk about why it's necessary, because it would just be part of the culture and part of the tradition of this is how we handle this topic. If we handle the topic this way, everybody's comfortable, everybody's protected, and actors don't get mentally, psychologically, or physically damaged in any sort of way. That it becomes part of the fabric of creating art, that you can do these things and still create fantastically, and dangerous in the sense of emotional, I should clarify. For the audience, observing that while the actors go home and, you know, have completely and utterly normal lives. One of the things that's interesting about this is you think about showmances, that old adage of what happens in the show. Well, I do believe that some of those may have ruining of marriages or whatever the stories you hear about actors falling in love with each other, because it is so intimate and because it is so sharing and like being in the trenches and you're sort of sharing this one moment that only two people in the world will share. It's like a relationship in that by building some of these best practices and blocks, it creates a barrier in a good way of safety, so that you can leave whatever work you're doing in the theater or the rehearsal hall and go home to a normal life. Now, that's not to say that you don't meet people and fall in love with actors all the time. It happens. I married someone I met during a show. But that was aside from, you know what I mean?
And there's a difference, right? Because if you end up falling in love with everyone you're in a show with, then you start to realize, like, wait a minute.
Well, and there are stories out there. I can't reference who that is. I know that there was an old story that Siobhan told me, Siobhan Richardson, who is my, one of my mentors and friends working on this with me, told a story, tells me the story about, I cannot remember the actor, but it was, he would fall in love with his co-star, and when the run of the show was over, they would inevitably break up because the showmance or the reality that they had created ended. And then the next one would come along, and, oh, my God, I'm in love with her, and so forth. So this is also, it's about that as well, as keeping you normal and protected. And
well, there's very little jobs out there where you're tasked with going to emotionally dangerous places all the time. I mean, that's like theater is presenting you things that you hopefully aren't experiencing every day in your life. And so to have to go there all the time, it's like, no wonder you need a way of which to deal with that and to break away from it at the end of the day.
I agree with that completely.
Yeah.
Yes, we've solved the world's problems. Wonderful.
Got it.
This is the end of all things. All right, so come to me for all your answers. I have them all, apparently. I say facetiously, just to make sure.
Great. That's clear. Well, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.
Is there anything? I think that covers...
It covers pretty much everything we talked about.
Yeah.
Anybody who's listening out there and thinking about creating theater, I will get on my soapbox and say, hire a fight director.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know what you're doing... Even if you do, a third outside eye of an expert who handles violence is always a better thing. I'm an advocate for this. There are too many. I don't ever want to see or hear about another actor being harmed on stage because of a prop, because of a gag that went. We call in the industry, we call them gags in the sense that you do like a hanging, a slap, a punch, a this or one. I don't ever want to hear about someone ever being physically assaulted in that way again. Mm-hmm. Accidents happen, but they happen a lot less frequently when you bring experts who handle violence in on a regular basis. So, to that end, also start. I hope that people start consulting intimacy directors, or that this becomes a regular thing. That there is a conversation that we start this. So. Listen, kids, when you're out there, hire a fight director, hire an intimacy director, keep your actors safe. I think I just hate myself for just doing that, but whatever.
Oh, I loved it. That'll be my little sound clip.
Yeah, that's going to go very well. Put that in my blog. Yeah. This is what I sound like in real life.
All right, so you can check out Intimacy Directors International. I'll put a link in the description. And where can we see some of your work?
Well, currently The Birds is going, oh my gosh, I don't know the dates. I'm going to have to talk with Brendan soon. My life's a bit. If they were birds at the University of Alberta, it's going to be a fantastic play. And I'm going to delve into some very, very dark and wonderful work and stories that need to be told. And this story in particular is a very dangerous and dark story about assault and rape and all these other terrible things that are still happening to people. So it's an important conversation to have, and I think that people will really come out of it talking and sharing those experiences and so forth.
Well, that's great. Until next time, this has been Talking Theater with my guest Jade Elliott McCrae. We'll see you all next time.
Thank you very much.